Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 15.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal Season 15, Episode 8. And for the eagle-eared amongst you, you may well notice a difference in how I sound, and that's because I've had to set up a temporary studio in my dad's house, which is very nice, but it's different than what I'm used to. So if there's a slight difference, I do apologise if it affects your listening quality, hopefully not, and we have one hell of an experience to give to you today. It's truly unbelievable that next week will be the penultimate episode of Season 15. I genuinely don't know where this season's gone. But I know one thing, the episode we give you today, next week, and definitely the finale, are all episodes which should, at the very least, make you look over your shoulder. But of course, before we reach any of that, we need to thank our wonderful team over at Patreon. Now, when you join our Patreon, not only do you receive everything that's on this feed, both ad-free and before everyone else, you can also receive complete access to the full back catalogue of Dark Bites. Dark Bites is a weekly Patreon-only podcast which covers some of the shorter stories which didn't quite make the main show. And there's well over 70 hours worth of Patreon-only content. And of course, we release a new episode of Dark Bites each and every Sunday of the year, even on the downtime between seasons. And therefore, with a break in seasons coming up, now is the perfect time to sign up. But aside from all of the Patreon extras, the ad-free episodes, early releases, and Dark Bites, the best thing about Patreon is the community itself. We have built a genuine community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over at Patreon. And we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Kirsten Foley, Dylan Guerra, Kate Kate, Melissa Goodine, Jill White, Susan Burkholz, Danita Kelly, Cole Camrath, Ashley Lawson, Beck Stone, Holly Smith, Dustin Lindy, Brandy Darst, Tavia Dillon, Lee Lane, Ian McNee, Nee, Heather Walsh, Liam Nielsen, Jalissa Hankins, Daniel Chapman, Nick Mouch, Jordan Grout, Brittany Bent, Sarah Camp, and Chantel Smith. Thank you so much for the support, guys. It genuinely means the world. So if you like the sound of early ad-free releases and, of course, access to the Dark Bites back catalogue, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time. Lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable and, most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. As we hear all about the darkest benevolence. My name's Sally. I'm a long-time listener and first-time writer. I've been glued to your podcast for ages, amazed and sometimes chilled to the bone by the experiences your listeners share. I, too, have my own story to tell. I don't share it often due to previous ridicule. But after listening, I feel this is the right place to share my story. I used to work as a nurse in the 80s. It was a pretty normal job. I'd spend my days, and far too many nights, at a major unnamed hospital. But in 1985, things took a strange turn. My hospital was undergoing major renovations, and I was temporarily moved to an old hospital, one that was on its last legs, literally waiting to be demolished. The setting of this place alone, with so many pitch black wards you would walk past on a night shift, was enough to make anyone's imagination run wild. But what happened there, and what appears to have followed me home, is something I'm still trying to wrap my head around. I'm writing to share this in the hope your audience may have some answers, or at the very least, to know I'm not alone in this. So this is my account of the events that unfolded in that hospital, and my actual home. So, about that old hospital. Well, they told us it would only be for a short while, just while the renovations at our main site were completed. Honestly, I wasn't too thrilled about the move. But we nurses are pretty adaptable. We have to be in our line of work. The place they sent us to, well, it was like something from a gothic novel. Massive, with long, echoey hallways, and that smell. You know, like, well, like old books and disinfectant mixed together. I can't name the hospital, but it was originally built in the early 1900s, and it showed every bit of its age. This wasn't the kind of charming old that gets you historical plaques. No, it was the kind of old that felt like it was hanging on by a thread. They were closing it down ward by ward, and by the time I got there, the palliative care ward was one of the last ones still operating. It felt like being assigned to the last lit room in a gradually darkening building. The ward itself was on the third floor, right at the end of a particularly long hallway, lined with windows that showed nothing but the grey, drizzly sky outside. And of a night, those windows were so black that they became like mirrors, and I'm not sure which was more intimidating. Most days, it felt like walking into a cloud as I went to start my shift. The palliative care ward is a tough assignment under the best of circumstances, dealing with terminally ill patients, trying to make their last days comfortable, dealing with the emotional weight of constant loss. But doing all that in a place that felt more like a film set of a ghost story, well, it definitely added an extra layer. One of heaviness, really, to the job. My first day there was surreal. The floorboards under the lino creaked beneath my feet. The flickering lights that never seemed to be fully replaced. It felt like stepping back in time. There were only a few of us staff assigned to the ward. Not surprising, as the hospital was winding down operations. But it did give the place an abandoned feel, with more empty rooms than occupied ones. Every shift would begin with a macabre checking of which rooms still had patients in, and which ones were now empty. A daily reminder of the inevitable that we all will face. I tried to keep a positive attitude. You had to. You had to try and bring a light into the place. But there was only so much you could do to brighten up a space that seemed so determined to remain sad. But that's where I met Edna, one of the patients, who, despite everything, managed to bring a bit of life to the gloom with her wit and laughter. Little did I know, our budding friendship would soon take a turn, which even now I find both inexplicable and terrifying. Edna was one of those people you meet and immediately know they're going to leave a mark on your life. When I first walked into that room, she greeted me with a smile that lit up the room. Despite being in her late 80s and frail and terminally ill, she had this spark about her, a zest for life, that was contagious. From our very first conversation, it was clear that Edna was not your typical patient. She had a sharp wit and a penchant for jokes that would make a sailor blush. Every morning, as I made my rounds, I would look forward to reaching her room, like a little oasis of joy amongst the daily reminders of mortality that fill the ward. I began bringing fresh flowers for her every day, only a small gesture, but something that would make her eyes sparkle. She loved tulips and daisies. Over the weeks, I learnt a lot about Edna. She'd been a school teacher most of her life. She'd never married or had kids, and filled her days with friends, books, and what she liked to call mischief. She had this laugh, a heavy, hearty, mischievous, and full of life laugh, one which would echo down the hallways, challenging the somber silence. But as the days passed, I noticed changes in Edna. It began subtly. Her laughs became less frequent, and she grew more tired. Conversations we used to have about her adventurous youth or her cheeky escapades turned shorter. I attributed it to the natural progression of her condition. But there was something else in the back of my mind, a nagging feeling that something else was amiss. She began to spend more time sleeping, her once vibrant expressions fading into a tired, weak smile. It was heartbreaking to see such a lively spirit being dulled. I missed our chats, her jokes, and that mischievous twinkle in her eye. But I still continued bringing flowers, hoping at least each bouquet might bring a bit of colour back to her increasingly pale cheeks. Then, one day, everything changed. I walked into her room with a fresh bunch of daisies, expecting to see her resting quietly. But no, she was standing by her bed. Not only a sight I hadn't seen in weeks, but one I didn't think she was physically capable of. But this time, there was no warmth in her eyes. Her gaze was cold, piercing in fact, and she stared right through me, with an intensity that literally stopped me dead. Before I could ask if she needed any help, she pulled the IV from her arm, causing a small amount of blood to spill on the floor. And her voice, when she spoke, was nothing like the playful tone I was used to. It was accusatory, chilling. "You caused Howard's death," she said, and she pointed a shaky finger at me. Those words hit me like a physical blow. In a panicked daze, I ran to get help, but when I returned with a nurse from the next ward, it was too late. Edna was on the floor, lifeless, her accusation still hanging heavily in the air. The image of her lying there, the aftermath of her final confusing words, haunted me, as they still do today. What she meant, how she knew about Howard, are mysteries that began a series of events I'm still struggling to understand. That moment with Edna shattered the ordinary rhythm of my nursing duties and thrust me into a spiral of confusion and fear. Her accusation about Howard was not just unsettling, it was deeply personal. You see, Howard had been my fiancé, and he'd committed suicide. His tragic death had left a scar that I'd painstakingly tried to heal over the years. But to hear his name in such a startling context, especially from Edna, whom I'd never spoken to about my past, was jarring to say the least. Howard was a complex soul, prone to bouts of depression and paranoia. Like most relationships, ours had its ups and downs, but the ups were very up and the downs very down, largely due to his mental health struggles. He was constantly worried that I was going to leave him, and despite my reassurances, he convinced himself I was. His death was a heartbreaking end to a series of misunderstandings and tragic decisions. He overdosed in our kitchen, one quiet Sunday afternoon. A day, as you can imagine, that's permanently etched into my memory. I came home and found him laying on the kitchen floor, and the shock and the grief of that discovery were overwhelming. After Edna's death, the hospital conducted a routine investigation, as they do with all sudden deaths. But nothing out of the ordinary was noted. No one could explain her last words to me, and my questions therefore remained unanswered. Her file didn't mention any cognitive decline that could explain such a delusion or hallucination. And her accusation seemed all the more mysterious because of that. The days following were tough. I kept replaying that moment over and over in my head, trying to understand how Edna could have known about Howard. Had I mentioned him in passing without realizing? Did she overhear a conversation? But these theories seemed unlikely. I hadn't spoke or really even thought about Howard for years. This was over 10 years ago, and I had lots of counselling. I felt a chilling sense of unease every time I entered the ward, half expecting to see her, standing there, accusing me. Today's show is sponsored by Acorns. Now, I used to believe investment was only for people on Wall Street or people with finance degrees, people who used phrases like buy low, sell high, and other things I will never understand. But the one thing I do understand is the importance of letting your money and your future having a chance to grow. However, investments can seem daunting and most people don't know where to start. And for many people, including me, you believe you need a lot of money before you start investing. Plus, we all have busy lives and we don't have the time to go researching how you start investing. So we say, I'll do it tomorrow or next week or next month. But we all know tomorrow never comes. But Acorns make it so easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals and then automatically invest your money for you. I've recently turned 45 and investment has never been on my radar, but people like Acorns are so clear and straightforward, they've not only put it on my radar, but took it off my plate. So head over to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app today and start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investment involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I was granted a leave of absence due to the emotional toll the incident took on me. I needed time to regroup, to settle the turmoil that had been stirred up. But leaving the hospital didn't mean leaving the experience behind. If anything, it followed me home. It began with small but barely noticeable things. I would catch a glimpse of a figure in the mirror, or a reflection of a window. Then I'd turn around and obviously there would be no one there. At first, I chalked it up to stress and grief. The shadows in my mind playing tricks on me. But then things began to escalate. One night, as I lay in bed trying to sleep, I heard the unmistakable sound of a man crying. It was faint, distant, yet distinctly real. But most terrifyingly of all, I recognized the sobbing. It was Howard. I had heard that same desperate sobbing in the darkest days of his depression. He would lock himself in the bathroom and just cry. The house was empty, but this sound was as real as the laptop I'm writing on right now. Shaken, I searched the entire house. I turned on every light, but I found nothing, no sign of anyone. I tried to convince myself it was just a figment of my imagination. What with all the recent stress, all the nerves, the anxiety, I really should just try and calm. A laugh rang out, sharp and clear. A laugh that wasn't Howard's, but it was one I had come to know well. It was Edna's. The sound seemed to come from upstairs, and I hesitantly made my way to the source. With my heart pounding and the atmosphere feeling heavy, like it was charged with an energy, I noticed the bathroom door, which I knew I'd left open, was now firmly shut. Maybe this was where the sound came from. I stood outside. I gathered the courage to open it. When, just as I'm reaching for the handle, I leapt back. I took a deep breath and I screamed no as I opened the door, but the room was empty. But the shower curtain was swaying slightly from some movement. I tentatively pulled it back, half expecting to find someone, but again there was no one there. Relief washed over me, but it would be short-lived. As I turned to leave, the sobbing started again. I just slumped against the bathroom wall. The mournful sound filled the house. I knew this was not my imagination. I just didn't know what to do. The incidents at my home only intensified, and each one was like peeling back layers of my unresolved guilt over Howard's death. His presence, or what felt like his presence, became a constant fixture in my life, blurring the lines between the past and the present. He was in my thoughts almost constantly. This connection between Howard's memory and the eerie occurrences forced me to confront my feelings, feelings I'd sincerely buried long ago. Despite my initial reservations, I began to document the events. It started as a way to assure myself I wasn't losing my grip on reality. Notes on paper seemed more tangible than the whispers of shadows or cries in the night. Each entry detailed the time, the date, the description of what happened. Crying, laughter, unexplained movements. Yet, writing it down did nothing to ease my mind. I wondered if perhaps Edna's spirit had somehow latched onto me, a conduit through her last moments, moments of heightened emotion and confusion. Her accusation about Howard had been so specific, so targeted. It felt as though she'd somehow tapped into my deepest thoughts. The thought she might be haunting me was as unsettling as it was surreal. Or should that be real? The possibility that Edna had knew about Howard because of some supernatural knowledge or sensitivity was something I considered. You see, in the palliative care setting, I had witnessed patients in their final moments. And they would speak about seeing and knowing things that no one could see or understand. Could Edna have perceived the guilt that subconsciously weighed on me? Was her spirit somehow mingling with Howard's in my home? Some weird manifestation of both of their energies. My sleep became scarce. Haunted by nightmares where Howard and Edna would both appear, not as they were in life, but as distorted figures, both accusatory and in suffering. The boundary between when I was awake and asleep began to blur. Every noise at night seemed a call or a warning. I started seeing shadows, fleeting glimpses that would vanish when I tried to look at them. And the air in my home felt thicker, charged, with some silent tension that seemed to press against my entire being. Desperate for relief, I sought out the advice of a therapist, hoping to find a rational explanation or at least some strategies to cope. The sessions helped me understand that whether the hauntings were real or not, my reaction was valid. And they did indeed help. But understanding does not equate to solving, because those occurrences did not stop. If anything, they adapted, as if they were aware of my attempts to rationalize them away. It was during one particularly distressing episode, where the sobbing Howard seemed to be right outside my bedroom door, that I decided to take a more direct approach. If these spirits, or my mind's creations, were calling for attention, then perhaps facing them head-on was the only thing to do. I considered spiritual or paranormal intervention, something I thought I would never entertain. And this decision led me to seek help from someone I hoped was more accustomed to dealing with these matters. My original hospital's chaplain. His reaction to my story was one of concern, but thankfully not one of disbelief. He listened intently, his expression thoughtful, and when I finished, he offered not just sympathy, but a practical suggestion. He wrote down the phone number of a priest he knew, someone allegedly experienced in matters more spiritual and mysterious than what typical therapists or even clergy could address. With the chaplain's note in my hand, I felt a mix of relief and anxiety. Was I ready to confront whatever was in my home, possibly stirring up more than just the echoes of my past? It was a question that weighed heavily on my mind as I prepared to meet the priest and discuss the possibility of him, well, doing God knows what, not knowing if I was stepping closer to a solution or deeper into the unknown. During one particularly unsettling event, I was taking a shower, and as I washed my hair, I saw what looked like the silhouette of a person on the other side of my opaque shower curtain. Well, my heart raced as I watched this outline move closer towards the shower. Then I heard breathing, heavy breathing. I gripped the shower curtain and I yanked it back, only to find the bathroom empty. But the steam was swirling in the air, like something had just left the room. The very next morning, I called that priest. I was skeptical but desperate. We arranged a time for him to come to the house, and I explained the situation over the phone, my voice trembling as I recounted the events. He listened in silence. He interjected occasionally, asking a few pointed questions about the occurrences. I think he was trying to decide if I was mad or genuine. Thankfully, he believed the latter. When the day arrived for him to come around, I found myself unable to be in the house. The thought of being present whilst confronting whatever spirits haunted my home was just too overwhelming. Instead, I decided to visit Howard's grave, a place I hadn't been since his funeral. It seemed, for some reason, to be the right place to be, whilst the priest done whatever he was doing in my home. I spent that time at the cemetery talking to Howard, not sure if I was really expecting him to hear me or not, or if it was more for my own cathartic release. I apologised for the things left unsaid, for not being there when he might have needed me the most. It felt like a necessary step, a way to address the guilt that Edna's accusation had stirred up in me. Meanwhile, back at my house, the priest was, I imagine, moving through each room, saying prayers, doing whatever ritual it was. By the time I returned, he was just finishing. He had a solemn look on his face. He offered no details, just a simple assurance that it was done. Whatever it was. But the house did feel different, quieter, like a heavy weight had been lifted. Whether this peace was permanent or temporary, only time would tell. In the days following, the absence of the disturbances was both a relief and a source of suspense. I found myself waiting, almost expecting laughter or cries, but they never returned. The silence was profound, a stark contrast to the weeks of mysterious sounds and unnerving sights. And this peace allowed me to reflect on the events I'd been through. I began to feel a genuine sense of closure, not just regarding the recent hauntings, but also my past with Howard. My visit to the cemetery had been more healing than I anticipated, allowing me to vocalize and release the guilt that I'd carried since his passing. This emotional unburdening, coupled with the priest's seemingly effective ritual, gave me, for the first time, a true sense of peace that I hadn't felt in a long, long time. So much so, I felt the need to return to Howard's grave, to kind of say thank you, and I laid some flowers on his grave. As I was walking out of the cemetery, genuinely feeling like a weight was lifted, to my left, I noticed a fresh grave. It was adorned with tulips and daisies, and it bore a photo embedded in the headstone. To my astonishment, it was Edna. Seeing her face, smiling like I remembered her in better days, brought back a rush of memories and a surprising wave of comfort. It felt like a sign, like a nod from the universe that the path I'd taken was the right one. This prompted a deeper reflection on the connection between our lives, our deaths, and what energies we leave behind. Could it be that Edna's spirit had indeed been reaching out through this veil in her last moments of confusion and pain? And maybe somehow, genuinely only God knows, in resolving my own unfinished business with Howard, I'd somehow helped Edna find her peace as well. While returning home from the cemetery that day, I felt a resolve strengthen in me. The fear that had once clouded me had lifted, and in its place, a cautious curiosity about the unseen world had taken root. I began to consider sharing my story, wondering if others had experienced similar things. If perhaps in telling our stories, we find a collective healing or understanding, then the world will be better. The priest, before leaving my home that day, offered few words, but his parting smile was enigmatic. "It's done," he had said. And indeed, something profound had shifted. Be it through his ritual or the personal apology to Howard, the haunting had ceased, leaving behind only a quiet introspection of life, death, and the in-between. Today I look back on those weeks with a newfound respect of the complexities of our spiritual existence. I am more open now, more accepting of the possibilities that lie beyond what we can see. And while I hope to never experience anything like that again, I'm slightly more prepared to face whatever weirdness life or the afterlife may throw my way. Thank you for allowing me to share my story with you and your listeners. It's my hope that by revealing my experiences, others may find the courage to confront their own hauntings, be they spiritual or guilty memories, and perhaps find their way to peace as well. Best, Sally. Well, Sally, thank you so, so much for providing us with episode 8 of season 15. An unbelievable story, but very believable, and also very terrifying. Very rarely when doing the dark paranormal does a story feature something which sticks in my mind and repeats and terrifies me. And this experience contains one of those things. Because believe me, there's no way on this earth I will be using a shower curtain again. I'd sooner the bathroom floor flood than not be able to see who's in the bathroom. And I'm only partially joking with that. I'm sincerely thinking about how I can position the shower so I don't need the shower curtain anymore. But sincerely, Sally, thank you so much for such an interesting experience. Of course, next week we have episode 9, our penultimate episode of season 15, which means this week will be your penultimate minisode. So I'll speak to you then. For our Patreons, I'll speak to you on Sunday for another edition of Dark Bites. And for everyone, stay safe, take care, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time, right here, on The Dark Paranormal.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.